We can see the parallels of politicians in more recent times who learned from the likes of Demosthenes, that where there's a will, there's a way. But it takes years of hard slog and hundreds of speeches to get there. For example, it took years for Winston Churchill to overcome a lisp and a stammer. But you'd never know that when you hear his "We will fight them on the beaches" speech. And how many people know that in public speaking, there was a certain person at Crozer Seminary who got a C+, and his name was Martin Luther King Jr. Classical rhetoric has also been a great model for speech writers. Two speeches that come to mind here that I think show the modern debt to the classical are President Lincoln's Gettysburg Address of 1863 and President Bill Clinton's speech at the United States National Cemetery above Omaha Beach on June 6, 1994, and this marked the 50th anniversary of the D-Day landing. Both of these have as their model Pericles' great funeral oration, which he delivered at the end of the first year of the Peloponnesian War. Now, the funeral oration, or in Greek, the word epitaphios, which gives us our word epitaph, the funeral oration was a very solemn speech in which the speaker acknowledged the ultimate sacrifice of those who had fallen. It praised their nobility because they died for a great ideal, for freedom, for their city, for its democratic constitution. And it also goes on to say that they have won eternal renown for their selfless deeds. By justifying their deaths in this way, the speaker attempts to lift the hearts and spirits of his audience, many of whom suffered losses. So in many respects, a funeral oration is more for the living than the dead. In Pericles' speech, the constant themes include the memory and glory of the dead, which will be ageless. It will never fade. Another theme is that the city will never stop honoring them. They have won eternal renown. That our way of life is worth fighting for, even if we have to die for it. And as I said, Pericles even calls Athens and its democracy the school of Greece. Now, funeral orations that we have by other orators throughout the classical period echo the same sentiments. These sentiments are echoed in Lincoln's Gettysburg Address with such things as, "The world will little note, nor long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here. It is for us the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced." And in President Clinton's speech we have, "On this field there are 9,386 who did not return home. They were the fathers we never knew, the uncles we never met, the friends who never returned, the heroes we can never repay. They gave us our world. And those simple sounds of freedom we hear today are their voices speaking to us across the years. 50 years ago, the first Allied soldiers to land here in Normandy came not from the sea, but from the sky. They were called pathfinders, the first paratroopers to make the jump. Deep in the darkness, they descended upon these fields to light beacons for the airborne assaults that would soon follow. Now, near the dawn of a new century, the job of lighting these beacons falls to our hands. To you who brought us here, I promise we will be the new pathfinders, for we are the children of your sacrifice." John F. Kennedy's first speechwriter, Ted Sorensen, told him to use Lincoln's Gettysburg Address as a model. As we can see, Sorensen was telling him ultimately to use Pericles' speech as his model. I'm sure you can come up with other examples if you can put your mind to it. Our democracy might be different from what it was in the classical period, but apart from the different circumstances, the dependence on rhetoric has changed so little. we've needed to chart the rise of the demagogues so that we can understand as best we can why the Athenians did what they did in their history after 462, how politics were practiced in classical times, and the differences between the political systems of classical Athens and now. And talking of now, we turn to the Peloponnesian War to see how that war is a glaring example not only of the civil strife and destruction that can be caused by states operating for their own imperialistic best interests, but also of the very real downsides to direct democracy. With these sobering thoughts in mind, let's go to war. Thank you very much.